G'day folks, welcome to Pause and Listen, a podcast series brought to you by Big Dog Pet Foods, the leading pet nutrition provider in Australia with over 20 years of experience in the pet industry. We provide educational resources for pet parents and are proud of being transparent in everything we do. The podcast series is hosted by me, Johnny Manning, and we bring you interviews and deep dives into pet nutrition, pet care, training, and regular Ask a Vet segments. So thanks for tuning in. Now get your tails wagging and we'll get yapping. Well, good day, pet owners, fur parents and lovers of all creatures, great and small. Welcome to another episode of Pause and Listen. This is a Big Dog Pet Foods podcast and it's a place for you to come to find all manner of pet-related information. My name is Johnny Manning. I'm your host today. But today, I've got a very special guest. The one, the only, Dr. Edward Bassingthwaite, or otherwise known as Dr. Ed. Can we refer to you as Dr. Ed moving forward?
Yeah, why not?
Excellent. Nice and easy. Thanks, Dr. Ed. He's also known as the healing vet. Got a tough one to talk about today, Dr. Ed, but it's an important one, right? Because you never know when you're ever going to actually have to deal with something like this. So we're talking about cancer in your pets, how to deal with it, also how to prevent it. Dr. Ed, I just want to start off by saying, what percentage of dogs do you see are cancer-related animals and how prevalent is it out there in pet land?
Look, due to the nature of my practice, which is more kind of secondary level holistic, I see some. When I was working in the vet hospital, I probably saw more. You know, you get a lot of animals with skin tumors that need to be removed. And then you get animals that have, you know, major, more internal cancers that may or may not have spread from the primary site to other places in the body. But by the time your animals get to, I don't know, 7 or 8 years old, I think it's up to 30 or 40% plus of animals have had cancer by that time of age. So it's pretty common across the board through the whole life of an animal.
Has that increased in your time as a vet?
I feel like it has, but I don't have any real data to support that.
Yeah. Do you think the trajectory of cancer rates in our pets mirrors the trajectory of the rate in humans?
Oh, look, I think there's similarities, and I think that all of us, pets and people, are bathed in this toxic soup of chemicals that are in the environment that definitely have an effect on that ability of the body to stay healthy. And a lot of the things that industry makes, you know, I can't go into the names of them all because there's thousands of them, but a lot of them are carcinogenic. And there's been studies done where they got the cord blood from newborn babies and they have hundreds of different industrial chemicals in the blood at birth. So our pets, being smaller, they have kind of more surface area compared to the volume of their body. And that means that they get more affected by toxins. There's kind of more absorbed into the whole compared to how big they are.
So once again, with pretty much every problem with our dogs that we come up against, we're the problem.
Well, I think humans are this planet's problem. And, you know, I don't want to be too kind of negative because humans have got so much beauty as well. Yeah. You know, we're such a paradox.
Look, obviously with anything, when we're talking about health issues, prevention's better than cure, right?
So yeah, absolutely.
So let's start there. When we have a puppy and we're training our dog and we're getting our dog used to the environment that it's surrounding us, and we're doing all these things like we're potty training it, we're socializing our dog, we're getting it used to seeing a bike and a skateboard and a big person, a small person, all of these things that we can ensure that we raise a well-balanced, assimilated animal. Where does prevention from these chronic illnesses like cancer, where does that come into that whole process?
Well, I think with cancer, you kind of want to start thinking about what kind of dog you're going to get before you get a dog. You want to try and get a dog that has the healthiest genetics with the least amount of inbreeding, because that is going to make the whole being more vital and less likely to develop these kinds of illnesses. Now, sadly, many purebreeds are heavily inbred, and if you get an animal with fragile genetics, then my experience is they tend to be more prone to cancer and autoimmune diseases and a whole lot of other things.
Is that because their system isn't strong enough, or what's the reason behind that?
I think you could say that. You could kind of say that their vitality is pre-weakened because they don't have healthy genetics. They don't have a robust, healthy, diverse genetic content in their DNA. But then once you get a puppy or a kitten, the first thing to do is make sure you feed a healthy, fresh whole foods diet and give them, you know, supplements like antioxidants, make sure they've got all the essential nutrients that they need. Because if you've got the right building blocks to build a healthy body, you get a healthier body. Another thing that I think is important to do with your younger animals is do the minimum amount of vaccination that gives you protection. Make sure you titer test when you get out of the puppy kitten vaccination cycle. And make sure you titer test before any and all revaccinations as you go on, because there's just millions and millions of unnecessary vaccines being given to dogs and cats every year. And if you give an unnecessary vaccine to an animal that's already got a whole lot of antibodies in their system, it doesn't increase the strength of the immunity, but it does provide a risk.
Well, what's a titer test?
Titer test is where you get a little bit of blood out of the dog or the cat, and then you do a test to measure the antibody levels in it. The antibodies are what the body makes in response to the vaccine that then stop the disease from affecting them.
So that's for whatever vaccine you're looking at, titer test first, and the animal may not need that vaccine.
Is primarily for the core vaccines, the C3 or F3 vaccines is what you titer test for.
Okay. All right, so that's basically limiting the amount of toxins that's going into the animal's body, right?
Well, just limiting any kind of trauma or any kind of risk factor. The more that you can eliminate risk, the healthier your animal's going to be, the more vital they're going to be, and the less chance they have of developing something like cancer. Now, cancer is really complex and multifactorial. Sometimes you do everything right and you'll get a dog or a cat get cancer anyway. And there's no way that you can know whether or not that's going to happen with a given animal. It's kind of just like, you know, some people get struck by lightning. Most people don't.
Yeah. Okay. So what about stress in the environment and exercise and things like that? Because they're always the things that they're talking about with humans. Stress causes cancer and things like that. Is a similar scenario with our pets?
Well, look, stress and anxiety and trauma are absolutely a factor in these things, because if you've got any animal that's in a chronic stressed or anxious state, and post-traumatic stress is an ongoing chronic state of anxiety and arousal.
Yeah.
Well, then you've got an animal that's got high levels of adrenaline and cortisol in their system all the time. You've got an animal that all their blood most of the time is going to the muscles and not to the gut, so they can't actually effectively absorb the nutrients in a really good way. And any kind of chronic stress and anxiety damages the immune system over time. It causes the immune system to become less functional.
Okay. So with, you know, obviously the first part is prevention. So, you know, good, wholesome, raw food diet, minimum amount of vaccinations required, avoid toxins as much as possible, and plenty of exercise and de-stressing and a low stress environment, so to speak. What else, mate?
I think then it's important to have regular checkups.
Yeah.
You know, you go to your vet every year at least. If you really want to go to the highest level of care, you'd probably go in every 6 months for a checkup. And certainly once your animals get a bit older, once they get past maybe 5 years of age, you could maybe think about increasing to 6 monthly checkups. Because if your pets are going to develop some kind of problem, you know, little skin lump, if you get it when it's the size of a pea, well, the chances of that cancer having been able to actually spread anywhere else are a hell of a lot lower than if you let it grow up to the size of a ping pong ball or something like that.
Yeah.
So you want to be very aware of your animals and be watching out for any lumps or bumps or unusual symptoms, and you go off to your vet and you get them checked out. You know, if you go into a vet with a lump on an animal, they're probably going to do a fine needle biopsy where they take a needle and draw a little bit of tissue out, put it on a slide. Some of the time it'll just be a benign fatty lump, a lipoma, but if there are suspicious cells there, then you might need to send them off to a pathologist to try and work out what kind of cancer it is, how aggressive is it. And if you find suspicious cells, often your vet's going to say, well, let's just remove the whole lump with good margins and we'll send that off to the pathologist and hopefully we will have had a curative surgery and it won't recur.
You said good margins, just so people don't know, what does good margins mean?
When you surgically excise a cancerous tumour from the tissues in the body, you want to get 1 to 2 centimetres of healthy tissue in all directions around that unhealthy cancerous tissue, or you go to the nearest fascial plane. There's another way to look at it. You want to make sure that you've got enough healthy tissue all around the unhealthy tissue that you don't leave anything behind that can keep growing.
Because obviously cells you can't see, right? So you're sort of...
Not until you send it off to the lab. Yeah. So what happens then is that they section it up and they look at the margins under the microscope and see if they're clean or not.
Yeah, okay. So it sounds like that particular bit of advice is, you know, early detection is key, and that's where those regular checkups come in. But also if you do get some kind of diagnosis, to act pretty quickly on it, right?
Look, I think the sooner you can get rid of it, the better. Now, the kind of standard veterinary thing is going to be surgical excision. There are kind of more holistic options that if people have an older animal that they really feel like an anesthetic isn't going to be helpful, or if they have wishes not to use anesthetic, or they're really kind of a bit fundamentalist about complementary holistic stuff and they won't consider the more allopathic type of medicine, you can use cannabis extracts and homeopathy. And it's something that I certainly have some colleagues that use it extensively, and some of the case studies they've told me they can get some really beautiful results with it. So it's just another thing that can be used.
What's homeopathy?
Homeopathy is a energy remedy medicine. Okay. And you can use energy healing and supplements. There's different kind of herbal blends and things. There's acupuncture. The way that I do it is that if I'm treating a dog with cancer, I use medicinal mushrooms and CBD and all these other kind of more complementary things. Now, some people don't want to do chemo. You know, it's just like, oh, man, you know, maybe my dog's had so much life, we'll just go with palliative care rather than trying to be really invasive and trying to do a whole lot of stuff that might cause discomfort and suffering for the dog. It's so hard to know what to do, really, until you sit down and feel into what's going on. You know, what's right for my animal in this situation and for me? And I get some clients, they'll go the whole hog with chemotherapy and all that sort of thing. And sometimes they get great results with that too. And often I'll do more holistic support to help the animal through chemo and to kind of detox them after chemo and that sort of thing too. So there's no one right or wrong way, I suppose, is what I'm trying to get at.
Chemotherapy is obviously an option when the diagnosis comes back that requires it. Are all the same sort of treatments available for dogs that are for people? You know, you've got radium treatment, for particular types of cancer, you've got hormone treatment, you might have immunotherapy, all these things. Are they all available for dogs as well and cats as well?
Oh, look, yes and no. There's always going to be a lot more available for humans than there are for pets.
Yep.
There's always going to be a lot more kind of cutting edge and newer ways of treating cancer that are only being researched in humans and may not be suitable for animals, or there's not the resources to go and look at it in animals. And that being said, over the last few years, there's been a new cancer treatment for mast cell tumors in dogs, which is something that you inject into the tumor and it kills it. So I think that's come out in the last 10 years or so, 5 or 10 years. So there is research going into things that are also used in animals that are not available or not suitable for humans as well. Chemotherapy can be really expensive too. So the other thing that I run into with people with pets with cancer is, okay, so what's the financial reality that we're working with here? Because I don't think it's a great idea for people to bankrupt themselves trying to save their dog's life either. You know, I think that's not healthy for anyone.
It certainly needs to be a consideration, that's for sure. And obviously life stage comes into that as well, no doubt. With those treatments that are available, let's say chemo, for instance, whilst chemo has come a long way with people, and depending on what particular drugs you're on, the impact and side effects of that chemo can vary. Is that a similar situation with dogs as well? Do they still suffer the same impacts that we do from these treatments?
Interestingly enough, they don't suffer as much side effects with chemo in pets, because humans will put up with a lot more side effects than pets, and humans won't put up with their pets feeling really miserable. So they tend to use it at a somewhat lower dose rate in our pets than they do in humans. In humans, they'll push that envelope to the very limit of human suffering sometimes. Whereas with pets, I know we've also got a whole consent thing that we are consenting for our pets. It's not appropriate for us to be able to ask them to go through a whole lot of suffering that we can't explain the benefit for, I don't think.
It's such a, what's the word I'm looking for? It's almost like this minefield, you know, because as you just said then, that's such a good point. And it's kind of like the same with diet, with animals as well. Like, we'll put up with so much and we'll make these choices for ourselves and we'll deal with the consequences. But when it comes to our animals, we just won't abide them suffering in any way, will we? It's crazy. It's good, but it's interesting.
It's good, and in other senses, it can be kind of bad too, because sometimes you get humans that the animals never learn any kind of emotional resilience, because as soon as they have the tiniest little bit of discomfort, they get these helicopter pet parents come in and make them, oh, we've got to give you a pat, make you feel better.
They exist, so, the helicopter pet parents.
That's a totally different conversation than cancer, but It is an important thing to talk about, maybe another day.
And we could probably knock out a podcast on that one, mate. I mean, when we're talking about cancer in people, there are all these stats, right? And I understand the stats probably aren't as robustly researched and captured with animals as well. But is there a more prevalent type of cancer in animals? I know you mentioned mast cell tumours before, but they can be benign and malignant as well,
right? No. If you've got a mast cell tumour, then it's by definition cancerous.
It is, okay. Right, yeah.
You have a range. You have some that are not very aggressive and some that are very, very, very aggressive. Mm-hmm. But probably in dogs, the most common type of cancer that we see is lymphoma, of the lymphatic system. Other tumours that we can see in dogs are osteosarcoma, bone tumours. Mast cell tumours are very common. Soft tissue sarcomas, tumours of the oral cavity in the mouth. Now, you know, you can get benign ones there, but if they are malignant in the mouth, they're often really, really bad. Nasal tumours, hemangiosarcomas, cancers of blood vessels, and you can get bladder cancer in dogs as well. Cats suffer the same kinds of cancers, though I don't think I've really seen so much lymphoma in cats. And cats are much more prone to squamous cell carcinoma, which is a bit like the sun cancer that people get. And there's a whole lot of really rare ones too, by the way.
Yeah, well, it's kind of like that with people. And is that, and obviously with those different types of cancer, the treatment is very much a horses for courses approach as well. Each different type responds differently to different kinds, or is there a little bit more of a broad brushstroke approach?
Well, if we have a tumour, in Western medicine, at least in the allopathic kind of Western medicine, the treatments include surgery, which is debulking or complete excision, chemotherapy, radiation therapy. And there is some immunotherapy available for animals as well. Sometimes you need a combination of these things. And some smaller cancers on the skin you can freeze. I know my doctor's frozen a few things on me too. Chemotherapy can be effective, but, you know, it does carry a heavy toxic load, even though the side effects are not as severe. Some animals don't cope with it and you have to stop because they're just too unwell on it.
Yeah.
There's all sorts of different chemotherapy agents and there's all sorts of different protocols for different types of cancers at different stages of aggressiveness and that sort of thing. You get to the more kind of holistic approach, integrative medicine. The first thing that I want to do is to get the pet onto a diet that starves the cancer. Now, cancer loves carbohydrates and sugar. So if you can get really low or no carbs and you can go to a full ketogenic diet, but you probably need to do that under the guidance of a vet or a nutritionist because it takes a bit of calculating and you've got to ear prick your animal every day for a little bit of blood and test ketone levels. It's kind of technical and takes a bit of work.
Yeah. So obviously, I mean, this is a big dog pet foods podcast. Big dog would be one of those foods that you would recommend in that situation, obviously, which is great. So what else goes on in that holistic approach? So, and by the term holistic, do you mean a combination of treatments? What do you mean by that?
Well, holistic means that I'm considering the whole animal.
Yeah.
And it's probably more kind of another way to talk about it would be complementary alternative treatments rather than kind of mainstream mm-hmm. or what Western medicine would call mainstream treatments. So I like to get any and all pets with cancer under high quality organic CBD rich whole plant hemp extract.
Yep.
At the very least, that's a great palliative medicine. You do sometimes get some animals that will have tumors stop growing or reduce in size with cannabis extracts.
That's unbelievable. So
not a super common thing to see that kind of response. Antioxidants can be really helpful. Medicinal mushrooms like agaricus, chaga, cordyceps, lion mane, maitake, shiitake, turkey tail. Intravenous vitamin C infusions can be a great support. You need a vet to do that. Herbal therapy, Chinese and Western herbal therapy, acupuncture, energy healing. And, of course, you can do the integrated approach where you are doing surgery plus or minus chemotherapy plus or minus all these other more complementary integrative type approaches.
How do you decide which approach to take?
What I want to do if I'm working with a client and people can work with me on Zoom, you know, if you've got a dog with cancer and you want to have a bit of a more holistic integrative approach or even just talk about all the options, you can go to thehealingvet.com and look me up and I work with people all over the world. But what I do is I want people to understand all the options, the pros and cons of all the different things that are on the table And then what generally happens is they ask me a whole lot of questions till they run out of questions. And my intention is to help the people I'm working with come to the point where they can make a good informed choice that they're happy with, regardless of what the outcome is.
So basically, your goal is to provide them with all the information, ensure that they've extinguished all questions.
Yeah.
And then the path tends to illuminate itself.
Yeah, often. And, you know, I often talking to people who've tried a whole lot of holistic stuff and nothing's working. And then they're going, well, chemo is the only thing left and I don't want to do chemo. So there can be a whole lot of emotional difficulty to work through with that. And some people get really fundamentalist about complementary alternative holistic type things and like don't want to have anything to do with surgery or anything like that. Now, my view is that if you really want to be holistic, you've got to at least consider all the different options that are available.
Yeah.
And then you got to look at the pros and cons and try and make a measured decision that's going to give the best outcomes for the dog or the cat. Now, sometimes, of course, you don't know if you're going to get the best outcomes with a certain thing and you've just got to make the best decision you can and deal with whatever the consequences are from making that choice.
Let's do a little, I'm going to call it a role play. I'm coming to you with a 13-year-old, no, let's say 10-year-old Labrador. Give me a diagnosis. Say it's lymphoma, right? Just been diagnosed with lymphoma. It's 10 years old, so I don't know if we've got it real early, but it's not what you'd consider to be terminal just yet. What do you ask of me?
Well, for one thing, if you've got lymphoma and you've got to the point where you've got enlarged lymph nodes throughout the body,
yeah,
generally that's not a very good diagnosis. Lymphoma is a difficult cancer to treat and it's often not terribly responsive. Chemotherapy, you can get temporary cure, what they call remission, which if it's a permanent cure is still called remission after chemotherapy. But when you have this issue, you can kind of treat the animal palliatively with cortisone. But if you put them on cortisone, you're going to get 3 to 6 months where everything will regress and then it'll come back with a vengeance after 3 to 6 months and you're going to have to help your animal transition. Now, maybe if it's not severe, I mean, if you're getting to the point where the lymph nodes are swelling and up enough that the animal can't breathe and can't eat and is in discomfort, you've got to do something, even if it's cortisone, which has a whole lot of other side effects, you know.
Yeah.
If it's milder, then you might try all the diet and all the holistic things and just see if the animal gives you the response you're looking for. Now, sometimes they will, often they won't. So, you know, I worked with someone recently who had a dog that had really poor genetics and it had all sorts of problems all its life, allergies, immune stuff, crashing after being vaccinated, all sorts of serious, serious illness its whole life. So it was a wreck. And then it developed lymphoma. And they tried a whole lot of stuff, nothing worked. And the only option left was for them to try chemotherapy. And they didn't really want to. And then they had all these options of chemotherapy. So they didn't know what to do. And there's often a lot of overwhelm and confusion. And I can't always help people make a decision either, you know. Sometimes I'll say, well, you got to make a decision. And they just keep waffling about because it's too emotionally difficult to make the decision that they need to make. And sometimes that's really unhelpful because you might cross a threshold where treatment might have worked and now it won't. But, you know, as a veterinarian, all I can do is support people emotionally and professionally as best I can. And sometimes that works well for everybody. And sometimes people struggle to make a decision or they can't make a decision and things become inevitable and you might have to, you know, put the animal to sleep if things get too bad.
Have you ever had to provide treatment that you weren't comfortable giving, like that you had an owner demanding some kind of treatment and you're like, no, I don't think that's going to help the animal, but you had to go forward with it?
I can't think of anything like that, but I have had a few people come to me with dogs with bone cancer, with osteosarcoma, who are wanting to keep the animal alive. And the animal's in incredibly high levels of pain and osteosarcoma pain relief just doesn't touch it.
Yeah.
So, you know, sometimes I have to counsel people to stop keeping going and for the sake of the dog, you know, do the merciful thing. And that's a really difficult emotional conversation to have too, but you know, my job is to be the animal's advocate before anything else in the end. And if I feel like I need to, well, sometimes we have a really difficult conversation and sometimes they bugger off and never talk to me again. But that's just how it is.
What about the flip side of that where you've said, look, I really think this particular treatment can extend the life in a, you know, in a meaningful manner. And the pet parent has just gone, oh, no, that's not right. We're not going to do it. Have you had those conversations?
Not so much. No, most of the people I work with have done quite a bit of research. They're pretty aware of the more holistic, alternative, complementary way of doing things. Sometimes they need to come to me just to get clarity.
Yeah.
You know, to talk through, okay, this is what the regular vets have said about all this chemo, and would you put your pet through this operation is something that people will ask me sometimes. And, you know, I personally, if I had an older dog, I'm not very interventionist with my own older dogs. I just think, wow, you know, if you're 10 or 12 or 13, you've had a good life, and then they get a bone cancer in the jaw and you've got to remove half their jaw to do the operation. I think, oh man, would they really want to do that? Is that really in the animal's best interest? But that's me, you know. I've also seen people that have had their animals go through those surgeries, come out the other side and get more life and be happy. So everyone's got different ideas, I suppose, is another thing to be aware of when it comes to this whole thing of caring for pets and making choices about healthcare for pets and big decisions about big illnesses. And you've just got to find the best possible answer for you and your pets in the context that you're in.
You mentioned old dogs then. What do you class as that where you're presented with a diagnosis? At what age does age come into it?
Well, it depends on the dog. I mean, you can get some dogs that at 10 years old aren't very old, and you get another dog that at 10 years old is like really, really ancient and decrepit, depending right. on how their life has gone and their genetics and stuff like that. But you know a really old dog when you see them.
Yeah.
They're all stiff and rickety and grey and, you know, going deaf and blind and probably a bit demented. I know I lost my old whippet about four or five months ago now.
And I'm towards sorry the end, to hear that, mate. Sorry.
It was a relief for all of us when she went. I've got to tell you, she was just tired and ready to go, and we had enough of watching her ricket about being tired, ready to go as well.
Yeah.
But, you know, when you get into that really elderly, frail type thing, I don't want to be taking them to hospitals and having them poked and prodded and going under anesthetics and waking up with, you know, painful wounds where things have happened and all that sort of thing. But like I said, that's more kind of my personal view and philosophy.
We've spoken about transitioning before, but when it comes to this particular scenario, you know, the diagnosis is there and the decision is made, hey, we're not going to intervene here. You just apply that methodology around recognizing the time to transition that we've spoken about, right? It's like do it in consultation with your vet and you'll know, right, when it's time to actually begin that transition process.
Well, some people will know when it's time and some people won't because they're too emotionally entangled with their animals and they can't actually make a decision that's in the interest of the animal because it's got too much pain and grief going on to be able to do that.
Yeah.
And they'll work with a lot of people like that too. So we just keep talking, you know?
Yeah, keep the conversations
hopefully
open.
Yeah.
All right. Well, Dr. Ed, I want to sort of circle back and I guess sort of just briefly touch on some of the things we've spoken about because I think you gave some really good pointers there with regards to firstly prevention and then, you know, let's say a diagnosis does come. There are some really good points there. But one of the things I wanted to talk about is are there any standard symptoms of a dog that has cancer that you may see, or are they all just a little bit different pending what kind of particular
thing? Well, I suppose one common symptom of cancers in dogs is lumps, masses. You know, you get a lump. That's a symptom that is probably the most consistent. Now, if you got an internal lump, well, you can't necessarily see it. You might need to do an ultrasound or an X-ray or a CT scan or an MRI scan to be able to actually find them. And cancer can affect any organ. So you can get, apart from there being a growth, a mass of unhealthy cancerous tissue, when the cancer grows enough that it starts affecting wherever it is, then you can get symptoms in any kind of organ system. So you can get a really different broad spectrum depending on which organ's affected by the cancer.
So the key is just to maintain a really good, I guess, base of health with your animal, but also your understanding of their health and condition as well, which is, you know, paramount when you're a pet parent.
Yeah. Yeah, you've just got to have conversations and learn as much as you can and work out what all the pros and cons of everything are. And then, you know, you've got to make a decision. And sometimes that's just the first of a whole series of decisions that you have to make through the process of caring for an animal. And you might look back and think, oh, man, I wish I'd done something different, but that's pointless too. There's no point in torturing yourself like that. I mean, you made the best decision you could at the time. Everyone loves their pets. They're always going to do what they think's the best thing.
Yeah.
You'll get advice from your vet and sometimes you'll go with that and things don't turn out well. But medicine's like that. You can't guarantee outcomes in medicine, unfortunately.
No, some reason it always seems to be magnified when it's your pet that relies on you, you know what I mean, for pretty much everything. And that just makes that decision-making process all the more important, I suppose. So, look, I want to recap. So prevention, obviously, much better than cure. So when you spoke about prevention, you talked about diet, environment. What are those? We just list off some of those other elements in prevention. So stress-free environment, you know, good diet, happy, healthy, exercising dog, well-socialized.
And that includes a stress-free human, by the way. The stress-free humans in the household is super important because that affects animals very, very profoundly.
I think that's where the problem comes in, mate, I think half the time. So, but I totally agree with that, mate. They certainly pick up on everything. So that prevention, then, you know, an early diagnosis is always better, and then to act quickly and certainly understand what your options are. And as you just said before, you make the best decision with the information you have at that time.
Yeah.
Then looking at all of the options that are available, and it might be a little bit of column A, a little bit of column B, a little bit of column C, that whole integrated approach and holistic approach saying, okay, well, there are a whole bunch of things out there. Some may work and some may not, but do it obviously in conjunction with your vet as well, right?
Yeah. And one other thing I'd add, which is something that I talk about with everyone who comes to me with a cancer diagnosis in their pets, I say, okay, what are you doing to look after yourself through this?
Great tip.
And nearly always that human is doing nothing to look after themselves. They're spending 28 hours a day researching this cancer and every possible treatment, and they're stressed and they're not resting and they've dropped all their self-care if they had any. They're not eating well because they're using comfort food to try and deal with the stress.
Yeah.
You got to care for yourself through the process of your animals being unwell. It's super, super important.
Absolutely. That's probably really underrated actually, mate. That's a really, really good point. But in that last particular sort of point you made was around understanding when decisions need to be made and understanding that your animal just may be in too much pain and that may require some ultimate intervention.
Yeah, and, you know, have a friend to be a touchstone. If you're so emotionally involved with your pet that you find it really hard to make a decision, maybe have them ready to tap you on the shoulder if they feel like your pet is ready to go, you know, or it's too much pain or whatever. And your vet can help you with that too. Vets are pretty good at that. They have a lot of practice at it. And then you just got to be willing to let go of your pet when it's time.
Has this particular approach, and you know, you're so knowledgeable in many different areas, we're talking about this particular area. Let's say Dr. Ed, straight out of university, walks in the room. What does 2023 Dr. Ed, what advice does he give him after all your experience and what you've learned about, you know, treating dogs and cats with cancer? What do you tell that Dr. Ed?
Oh, have an open heart.
Yeah.
And listen.
Yeah.
Something that not all vets are good at because they're often very traumatized and got a whole lot of moral injury from being a vet and all sorts of other things, which leads them to close up their heart. And they've been abused by every second client who's come through the door for the last 10 years. Oh, that might be a bit of an exaggeration. Maybe every 10th client.
That's still too much.
So be kind to your vets, you know. They're genuinely trying to give you the best advice they can to help your pets. And sometimes they've got to help your pets die, and that's hard for everybody.
I love that, mate. Be kind to your vet. Literally, you took the words right out of my mouth, mate, especially in situations like that, like this that we're discussing when all the vet wants is a happy and healthy pet and a happy and healthy owner.
Yeah.
Dr. Ed, have we covered off everything, do you think? You know, I mean, it's a short period of time, but with a lot of bases to cover, a lot of information to touch on.
I can't think of anything else that we really need to talk about when it comes to cancer in pets. It's a terrible thing. It's probably not your fault if your pets get it, so don't start thinking that it is, even if you've done everything right. Like I said, that lightning can strike sometimes.
Dr. Ed, thanks so much for coming and having a chat with us on Pause and Listen. This is obviously a tough one to talk about, but you articulate things so beautifully and you give great, direct, concise information, mate. So thank you so much.
No worries.
Now, where can people find you, Dr. Ed? You mentioned thehealingvet.com. That's one place. Is that a .au or just a .com?
.com.
.com. What about on all those tricky social media channels? Are you out there doing your thing on those?
You can find me if you just Google for The Healing Vet, you'll find me all over the place.
Yep. You said before you do Zoom consultations as well.
Yep, I do Zoom consultations. Plus we've got the whole energy body balance online programs where you can learn how to find and heal silent pain for your pets and all that sort of thing. We've got lots of ways that we help people give their pets the best life they can.
You're a good man, mate. You're out there fighting the good fight, and for that, we certainly thank you. So that is Dr. Edward Baskingthwaite, the Healing Vet, Whole Energy Body Balance as well. Healingvet.com, if you just basically punch into whatever socials you're on the Healing Vet, you'll find this man doing his thing. And if you have any other questions about this story in particular or any sort of topic that we've spoken about in the past, you can just email customercare@bigdogpetfoods.com. You can go to the Big Dog Pet Foods website. There's a stack of information on there as well. And make sure you subscribe to this podcast, no matter what platform you're listening on, so you'll never miss an episode. And I reckon you could probably jump on there and give Dr. Ed and I a 5-star rating, because I reckon Dr. Ed did a 5-star job today, mate. And I think we deserve one, don't you reckon?
You're welcome. I hope I did. I just come along and talk, you know.
Well, it's good talk, mate. We certainly appreciate it. That's it from myself and Dr. Ed for this particular episode of Pause and Listen. So long. We'll see you next time. Make sure you give your pooch and your cat a scratch from us, and I'll be seeing you and talking to you next time. Hey, thanks for listening to our podcast. For more information and content, visit the Big Dog Pet Foods website. Please note that the information discussed in these podcasts is general in nature and has been provided in good faith for educational and informational purposes only. The information provided is not, nor is it intended to be, a substitute for professional advice or care. If any of the topics discussed raise questions or concerns for you regarding the health of your pet, we recommend that you consult your veterinarian or trusted pet health provider for an individual assessment and advice. Thanks again. We'll see you next time.